This episode was first posted November 19th, 2007.
This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 4, The Smallest Show on Earth, Part 1.
Do you mind telling me what single aspect of this situation strikes you as being even remotely amusing?
Hello, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. This time, we start a nice British comedy from 1957 called The Smallest Show on Earth. Now, most of it takes place around an old movie house of the post-war era, so it may awaken memories in a lot of folks. I think the only thing that needs translating for anyone not from the Commonwealth is the position of commissionaire. Now, in terms of a movie house, or cinema, or in this film, kinema, this was the big guy in the fancy military-style doorman's uniform who served as doorman outside the cinema, kind of like a bouncer outside a club. He could also be an usher and sometimes serve to try to get people in to see the show if they needed convincing, and sometimes here they do. So when we mention a commissionaire, that's the kind of person we're talking about. Now, there are a few pretty familiar names to fans of British film in this movie, but no doubt the most familiar name internationally in the credits here is Peter Sellers. But it may be a challenge finding him. Oh, he's there. But if you remember Peter Sellers with his talent, his brilliance for characters, he could be anyone in this movie. So see if you can guess just which character he's playing as we listen to The Smallest Show on Earth. A British Lion release. Frank Launder and Sidney Gilliatt present a Ralph Dearden production. A postman's truck pulls up to a block of flats in a London neighborhood. Virginia McKenna, Bill Travers, Peter Sellers, and Margaret Rutherford in The Smallest Show on Earth. A young blonde woman makes her way down flights of stairs to meet the postman for his daily delivery. He hands her a couple letters and she heads back up. Also starring Bernard Miles, with Francis DeWolf, Sidney James, George Cross, June Cunningham, and Leslie Phillips. Screenplay by William Rose and John Eldridge. The woman steps into the kitchen of her flat. Production manager, John Pellett. Art director, Alan Harris. Film editor, Oswald Haffenrichter. Director of photography, Douglas Slocum. The woman sets one of the letters from a solicitor on a tea tray she's been preparing, which she carries into the living room. Associate producer, Leslie Gilliatt. Music composed by William Alwyn and conducted by Muir Matheson. She sets the letter aside against a flower vase on a counter and carries the tea tray to a desk where a man types. Produced by Michael Ralph. Directed by Basil Dearden. The woman pours a cup of tea, adds sugar and milk, and sets it down beside the man. She puts an arm around him and kisses his head. As he types intently, she pulls a pencil from his mouth and replaces it with a biscuit, then steps away. Finally pausing his two-fingered typing, he holds up the typed page to study it. His face contorts with derision, surprise, approval, more surprise, and confusion. He bites the biscuit and snatches it from his mouth as he stands with his tea.
I shall never forget that day. Max was only halfway through the novel, and our funds were running low. Then the letter arrived, which was to change everything.
He finds it.
Jean?
Darling?
When did that come?
What? Oh, just now. I didn't want to distract you. Why, what is it?
He opens it and they read.
Max.
Great Uncle Simon?
I didn't know you had a great Uncle Simon.
Well, I didn't have a great Uncle Simon. So, there.
The whole estate. Laura Watts, where?
Oh, some mistake. I never had any great Uncle Simon.
Oh, you must have had a great Uncle Simon.
I didn't. Surely, if I'd had a great Uncle Simon, I'd at least have heard of a great Uncle Simon.
Simpson Carter and Son.
They must be out of their minds.
It says you'll get in touch with them.
Laura, what's that? Trunks?
He reaches across a bed for a phone.
Must be. I've never even heard of Laura.
Neither have I. Great Uncle Simon.
He dials.
Great Uncle Simon. Oh, Oh, operator, this is Northway 0267. I want Slaubra, Warts, 29. Oh, how is it? It's Slaubra.
Matt, you couldn't be...
Couldn't be what?
You couldn't be inheriting a fortune, could you? Because if you are, let me say right now, I love you more than ever.
She hugs him on the bed.
Don't be so silly. No, not you, operator. You know, I had a great-uncle Hugh and a great-uncle Edward, I think, but... Hello? Oh, Simpson, Carter and Son. Oh, my name's Spencer, Matthew Spencer. Yes, I think the point is that there's been some idiotic mistake, because I can tell you quite definitely I never had a... What? I beg your pardon? Oh, I did have a great-uncle Simon.
Oh!
Yes, just hold the line one moment, will you? The secretary wants to know when we can come down. Well, I think we can come right away. Yes, today. Yes, Paddington, 11:10.
Jean rushes to the closet to change.
We'll never do it.
Yes, I think we can manage that. Do you by any chance happen to know anything about the, estate?
She hurriedly pulls on some stockings.
Cinema? He owned a cinema.
What?
Just one other thing. Did you by any chance happen to know my great-uncle? Was he a huge fat man with a reddish beard who wore a sort of caper? Well, that must have been my great-uncle Edward.
Look, darling, if we better...
Well, it doesn't matter. Yes, tell Mr. Carter we'll be there, will you? Yes, goodbye.
Matt, we've only got 40 minutes. What am I going to wear?
Imagine not even knowing. What's more, great-uncle Simon seems to have been rich.
Did she say how...
Well, she said she couldn't talk on the phone. But if apart from anything else, he owned a cinema...
He must have been wealthy. And you really inherit everything?
Miss Elizabeth said so. Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Later, on the train, they have drinks in the dining car.
Thank you. Honestly, I'll pass out before we get to Slaubra.
Just think what it'll be like to have no more money worries, no more stupid, petty problems, to be able to do all the things one wants to do, too. To travel, for example.
Yes, you know, that's just the one thing that would be heavenly.
Think of all the fabulous places that are just names to us now. We can see. Summer camp. Doesn't that do something to you? Doesn't the very name...
Oh, it's a beautiful name.
Summer camp. San Francisco, Seville, Samoa, Samara.
Tell me some more about Samara.
Oh, darling.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's some of the brandy.
Well, here's to Samoa camp.
Oh, darling, I can't drink anymore.
But they toast. Later, the train pulls into a small industrial town, and Jean and Matt get off.
Train now standing at platform 3. Is the train for Stone, Blagley, Rosely, Wickham Falls, Everstreet, Mudbury, and Rittlesworth?
Unimpressed, they walk along the platform in Slaughborough Station.
What is that ghastly smell?
There's something dead around here.
We mean besides, Great Uncle Simon. Oh, sorry, darling.
They pause beside a station worker.
It's a curious smell, eh?
That smell? What is it?
I don't smell anything. Oh, you mean the glue factory. That's it, the glue factory over there. Pungent, isn't it?
Pungent's hardly the word.
Taxi, sir? Yes, please. Will you take us to Simpson Carter and Son, the solicitors?
Right, sir.
When they've climbed in the back of the old taxi, the driver struggles to get the door to stay closed, then gets in behind the wheel while munching on a sandwich. He drives off toward town. In the back seat, Jean giggles tipsily.
Why are you with us for this little dignity, eh? I mean, say, if a man dies and leaves you his entire inheritance, the least you can do is to observe the proprieties.
Oh, darling, you've been talking. You can't even say proprietaries. Proprieties.
Really? Try and be sensible.
Look!
Driver, stop a minute.
They stop near a huge cinema.
Driver, how many cinemas are there in Slaughborough?
Just this one, sir.
Matt and Jean look at each other with glee.
Matt, it's simply magnificent. It must be worth a fortune.
Driver, just wait here a minute, will you?
Matt and Jean clumsily step out of the taxi and toward the cinema, the Grand, where a line of people waits by a uniformed commissionaire.
I say, how's business?
What?
I said, how's business? How's business these days?
I wouldn't know. I mind me own.
He walks away.
a rude man.
You know something? I think that chap's got a little surprise in store for him.
What do you mean?
There's no excuse whatsoever for incivility. The very first thing I'm going to do is to boot him right out of the place.
Oh, darling, I'm sure he
doesn't
mean to be...
Nonsense, it's his job to be polite, not to... Wait till he finds out who he was being rude to. Come on, let's get to the solicitor.
At the solicitor's, a man opens a box.
My father asked me to handle this matter for you, Mr. Spencer. I told him you were calling, but he said he had an urgent appointment. I don't think he'd be gone long, though.
But you know something about it, don't you?
Oh, yes, I know all about it. As a matter of fact, I've had the job of establishing your existence. You've no idea the fun and games I had. Thought I'd never catch up with you.
I'm glad you did.
As my secretary said, she told you on the telephone the estate included cinema.
Yes, yes, she did.
So apart from a few personal effects and furniture and such like, I'm afraid that the cinema itself is all there is to your great-uncle's estate.
Oh. Still, that's quite enough, isn't it? He had everything he owned tied up in it, had he?
Incidentally, we've seen the cinema, Mr. Carter.
Oh, you have?
The question is, really, how much is the place worth as it stands, lock, stock and barrel?
Well, that's... rather difficult to say.
But even approximately, in round figures, is it worth £100,000?
£100,000?
You see, I haven't a clue about these values, but as cinemas go, this one surely is quite magnificent.
Well, we were almost overwhelmed. I mean, it's quite as splendid as all those in Leicester Square.
Mrs. Spencer.
Well, what is it? What?
My dear chap.
Mr. Carter, what is it?
I'm very much afraid. I wonder if my father's back. Dad?
Carter nervously checks a private office.
He's not back.
Mr. Carter.
I'm most terribly sorry, Mr. Spencer. Mrs. Spencer.
Sorry? Mr. Carter, what's the matter?
You see, I hardly know how to tell you.
You could find a way, Mr. Carter.
Well... may I ask, which cinema have you been looking at?
Which cinema?
You mean, there's more than one?
Yes.
It's not the Grand? But why did that taxi driver say that
he must have meant it was the only one open. You see, we had to close the Flea Pit the day after...
The Flea Pit?
I'm most terribly sorry.
Flea Pit?
I do, please forgive me. You see, it's always referred to locally as the Flea Pit. I should have said the...
The Bijou Cinema, as uneven letters announce on the domed roof of the old, worn building. Its outside decorations caked with dirt and dust. The Spencers stand before it in the street with Carter.
Well, I'm sure there is a business like show business, but somehow I don't think this is it.
Look at it. You mean to tell me my uncle actually charged people to go in there? The people actually paid?
Yes. Some.
A train roars past on an elevated track right beside it, shaking the letters on the sign until the J falls to the side.
Seems impossible. Did he run it himself?
With a staff of sorts. Three of them, actually. They're all under notice, of course. Well, shall we take a look inside?
Couldn't we just go away and forget it ever happened?
But they follow Carter to the Bijou's front doors. Carter opens one. And they step inside the small, dim lobby.
Pungent.
Matt glances up the stairs leading to the balcony, then notices a book on the box office counter titled The Way of an Eagle.
The cashier?
Mrs. Fazakerly. I'll lead the way, shall I?
They follow him through a set of double doors into the cinema. Ornate, but desolate and dilapidated. They all wander down the aisle.
The old place has been everything in its day. It was a theater way back before they built the railway. Then it was a music hall.
Wonder how my great-uncle got mixed up in all this.
Well, it was before the First War, apparently. Young Simon must have had quite a way with him. He even managed to get some of the local people to put their money into it. My dad did, as a matter of fact. Spencer's Electric Theatre was called in those days. The first in this part of the country.
A cat approaches them.
Pussy, here. Did anyone look after her?
Yes, old Tom.
The men walk off. But Jean bends down to the cat.
Come on. Come on, darling.
As she picks it up, an old man peeks through some curtains and watches her follow the others. The passing train outside shakes the chandeliers and makes the cat jump from Jean's arms.
What's that? Well, that'll be the 4:15 to Stoke.
Carter leads the Spencers into the projection room, past antiquated projectors. Matt taps one of them.
Do these things work?
Well, yes, I think so.
Setting a fallen part aside, Matt picks up an empty bottle of liquor.
The projectionist?
Mr. Quill.
He puts the bottle down.
Your great-uncle's private apartments.
They step into the modest old flat, still furnished and a little cluttered. Matt wanders to one of the framed photographs and picks it up.
I say, is one of these...
Oh, that's your great-uncle on the left, taken some years ago in the railway arms.
Wait a minute. It's all coming back to me now. I do remember them. They're all staying at my grandmother's, I think. Of course, I was only a kid at the time, but I remember there was some trouble about a chambermaid.
That'd be Simon.
Is this where...
Jean points to the bedroom.
Did he...
No. As a matter of fact, it was in the railway arms that your great-uncle...
He died in a pub.
Rather sad, really. You see, for many years, Simon was champion beer drinker of this county. He used to down a whole gallon of brown ale at a single draught.
8 pints?
On the evening of the 19th in the railway arms, somebody bet him. He shouldn't have tried it, you know. Not at 77.
Would it be irreverent to ask if he...
Oh, yes. He did it all right. The 10 shillings was paid to me as executor right after the funeral. Sad. Somehow not unfitting, you know.
Well, what in heaven's name are we going to do with it? Could we sell it?
Astonishing as it may seem, Mr. Spencer, your great-uncle had an offer for it only a few weeks ago from Mr. Hardcastle, the man who owns the Grand Cinema.
Well, what on earth does he want with this place?
I'll show you.
Through a window, they see the Grand standing beyond an empty lot.
You see the Grand there? Hardcastle's idea is to use that land as a car park. Now, the only way he can do that is to buy the Bijou and pull it down to make an entrance. No time will never sell.
Any idea what Hardcastle was offering?
Oh, the last offer was £5,000.
£5,000? And the old man turned it down?
Well, it was his home, you know, as well as his living.
£5,000? That's not bad. Not bad at all, is it, darling? When can we see Mr. Hardcastle?
Well...
Now? Today?
I'll see if I can arrange a meeting this afternoon.
Later in Hardcastle's office.
You'll have to excuse me, Mr. Spencer, but I'm rather a sentimental man. And old Simon's death came as a great shock to me. And a great shock indeed. Mind you, I never got to know him awfully well, but we were business rivals in a manner of speaking, and I liked him. He was a very likable man. You had to like him. I did, anyway. But still, as I say, Mr. Spencer, I'm a very sentimental man.
Yes, Mr. Hardcastle, we quite understand how you feel. The point is, now that Mr. Spencer here has come into his great uncle's estate, we have to consider the whole question of the Bijou.
The Bijou? Oh, yes, the Bijou.
Now, I've explained to Mr. Spencer that you made an offer to the late Mr. Spencer.
That's right, lad. I made him a very fair offer. But the old rascal... You'll pardon the use of the expression, ma'am.
Please.
The old rascal turned it down flat.
Well, I dare say he had his reasons, Mr. Hardcastle, but I'm prepared to consider your offer very seriously.
Here, hold fast a minute, lad. What offer are you talking about?
Well, your offer of £5,000.
£5,000? £5,000?
Oh, he's a great one, your husband, just like his great uncle.
£5,000. Oh, that's a good one. Oh, that's a great one, that is.
Oh, I wondered it'd be more like it.
But I don't understand. You offered my great uncle.
Oh, I know, lad, but that was a long time ago, before television it is. The Bijou was a going concern then. Have you seen it now, lad? No, I'm only offering you £500, and that's a good deal more than the old flea pit's worth.
If I may interrupt, Mr. Hardcastle, an offer of £500 is quite out of the question for my client. Well, there are debts of at least £750.
£750? Well, all right. Everyone knows I'm a sentimental man, and I liked old Simon.
750, then, but not a penny more.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hardcastle. I didn't mean that figure to be taken as one which my client would be prepared to accept.
No, but that's the figure I'm prepared to offer. 750, and no more.
Well, I'd like to have a word with Mr. Carter before I
take your time, lad. Take all the time you want.
Soon after, in the railway arms.
I'm not going to be done out of my inheritance by Mr. Albert Sentimental Hardcastle. What about your father?
My father?
Well, couldn't we drag him in and ask his advice?
Confidentially, my dad's always managed to steer a bit clear of old Simon's affairs. He said he wouldn't touch this with a barge pole. You know, I think my dad's right. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless you made Hardcastle believe that you didn't want to sell the old flea pit.
Hmm?
Well, you could tell you were going to reopen it and manage it yourself.
You're not actually suggesting that we start up
in... No, of course not. But you've got to make him think you're going to. As soon as he sees you cleaning your place up.
If you hit on something. As soon as he sees where
exactly.
He's cleaning...
If he thinks the old flea pit's going to open up again...
Bound to pass what he was going to pay my great...
No, quite. That's precisely my point.
It's a wonderful idea. I'll do it. That's it. It's a wonderful idea. I'll do it.
But Matt, it'll cost money.
That night in a hotel room.
Taking on the staff and doing the place up.
We'll get it all back. We have to be convincing, don't you see that? If Hardcastle thinks we're bluffing, just laugh, you know. But if, on the other hand, the bluff works...
Matt tries to thread a drawstring through his pajama bottoms.
It could mean £5,000.
Oh, do let me do that for you.
Darling, I can do it.
He pulls the drawstring out.
Well?
Then wraps it around himself like a belt as his wife turns off the bedside lamp and snuggles into bed.
What's so funny?
Samora, Samara, Samarkand, Slavra.
The next day, Carter drives the Spencers to the Bijou and parks.
Before we go in, there's something... I think I should tell you about Mrs. Zackley. You see, Mrs. Zackley and your great-uncle were, that is to say, that their relationship wasn't entirely, how shall I put it?
I've already put it very eloquently.
Jean turns to Matt.
Your family.
Grinning, he gets out of the car with the others.
Oh, and one other thing. If I were you, I shouldn't say anything to these three about wanting to sell the place. They must think you mean to open. Small town like this, you know, things get about.
Quite.
They step into the lobby and find the three elderly employees waiting for them, their expressions grim. Carter and the Spencers trade glances, then approach.
Good morning, Mrs. Blackley, Miss Quill, Tom. May I introduce Mr. and Mrs. Spencer, the new owners of Bijou? Mrs. Zackley, the cashier.
How do you do?
How do you do, Mrs. Zackley?
She frowns at them.
Mr. Quill, the projectionist.
How do you do?
He shakes hands with them, then shakes Jean's hand again.
How do you do?
And old... Where's he gone?
Carter finds the old man who'd peeked through the curtains earlier nearby.
Oh, it's all right, Tom. Mr. and Mrs. Spencer just want to meet you. There's nothing to be nervous about. Old Tom, the janitor.
Oh, I...
He shakes Carter's hand.
Yes. Well... I've asked you all here because Mr. Spencer would like to say a few words to you. Mr. Spencer.
Old Tom backs away.
It's all right, Tom. Mr. Spencer just wants to talk to you.
What's he going to say?
Well, I'd like to say that...
I know who you are. You're Mr. Carter.
Oh, that's right, Tom.
It was annoying. Mr. Carter, I've known him since you were a lad.
Well, first I'd like to say that... Although I hadn't seen my great-uncle for many years, I was very sorry to hear of his... I understand...
You're not Mr. Carter. He's Mr. Carter.
Yes. Well, what I wanted to say this morning was that my wife and I, we intend to reopen the... Bijou to reopen it as quickly as possible.
The employees just stare at Matt. Jean stifles a giggle.
Any questions?
Anxiously, Mr. Quill nudges Mrs. Fazakerly.
Mrs. Fazakerly.
The late Mr. Spencer was going to make a number of improvements before he...
She dabs an eye with a handkerchief.
Yes, Mrs. Fazakerly.
Then blows her nose.
For one thing, he was going to do something about the rats.
Rats?
Mr. Quill turns to her.
Tell him about my equipment.
I'm explaining to him about the rats.
My equipment's more important than your rats.
No. Tell him about my uniform.
If you'll kindly permit me to speak.
Well, I can see that we all have a lot to talk about. We must discuss it all later.
Well, I'll be off and leave you to it. You must all have a lot to do.
I'll see you out.
I'll come with you.
The Spencers step out with Carter.
It's all right,
because of you and your equipment.
Hmm?
If you'd spent your time looking after it, instead of boozing away up there.
Boozing?
Yes.
You stand there and accuse me of boozing.
Yes, I do.
But
outside.
Well, I'll let old Hardcastle know you're proposing to put him out of business, right?
Right.
And don't let those three in there upset you. It's just that they've been in the old flea pit a bit too long. Bye.
Bye.
Carter drives off.
Flea pit? More like a snake pit.
Back inside.
You kept it running.
Okay.
Why, if it wasn't for me, poor Mr. Spencer would have gone out of business years ago.
You and Mr. Spencer? Oh, yes. We know all about you and Mr. Spencer.
How dare you? You Mr. Spencer.
I did it.
Watching the bickering continue, the Spencers step toward their employees.
Is anything wrong?
Mr. Spencer promised me a uniform, like the man at the... Who are you?
It's Mr. Spencer.
Yes, I'm Mr. Spencer, Tom. Mr. Carter just introduced us.
Oh, he promised me a uniform, just like the man at the Grandad's. He promised me.
Well, I'm sure we'll get around to all your problems in time. Right? But first, well, let's see if I can learn how my great-uncle ran his business. Is that all right with you, Mrs. Fazakerly?
If those are your wishes, certainly.
See you two later.
Going to see us later.
Yeah.
Tom and Mr. Quill walk away.
This is fantastic.
What? Who are you?
Soon after, in the cinema office.
Well, Mrs. Fazakerly, I don't know very much about bookkeeping, but it seems to me these figures don't make any sense at all.
I beg your pardon?
Didn't my great-uncle keep any proper accounts?
Your great-uncle never kept anything, Mr. Spencer, that wasn't perfectly proper.
Of course.
He shows her the ledger.
Well, what are these, for instance? Groceries? Farm produce? Miscellaneous donations?
The late Mr. Spencer always found that the only way to run the cinema successfully was by having a great many private understandings.
What sort of understandings?
Complimentary seats were always granted to anyone who made any contribution.
If a farmer gave my great-uncle a chicken, his family got him for nothing.
That's it, exactly.
But what about the entertainment tax? Surely by not selling tickets, he was defrauding the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
It only seems like that, Mr. Spencer. But as the late Mr. Spencer always pointed out, you could hardly send, a third of a chicken to the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Now, could you?
She closes the ledger book.
Oh, just before you go, I think I ought to tell you, Mr. Spencer, that unless something is done about Mr. Quill, I am not prepared to continue in my present position.
Oh?
I can no longer tolerate his insulting and unseemly behavior.
Well, what are you suggesting, Mrs. Fazakerly? That I should give him the sack?
Sack, Mr. Quill? Sack, Mr. Quill? Oh, I'm afraid that would be quite out of the question. On account of the projection equipment, you know. Nobody else could possibly understand it. In fact, in 1937, when Mr. Quill had to go and have his appendix out, and the late Mr. Spencer called in another projectionist to take over, it was only 3 days before he had to have his appendix out.
Oh.
Oh, no. No, I merely wondered whether you would say something rude or unpleasant to him.
Well, Mrs. Fazakerly, I'll try and think of something to say. Excuse me.
Matt leaves the office and heads upstairs, where Mr. Quill meets him.
Well, when did we broke and have a word with you, Mr. Spencer?
Well, if it's about your equipment, Mr. Quill, I...
No, it's a... What equipment?
Well, the... No.
It's,
Glancing around...
It's about...
He takes Matt into the projection room.
It's about that woman, sir. That Mrs. Fazakerly. She's a troublemaker, sir.
She does nothing else but make trouble. Make trouble here, make trouble there.
Oh. Yes, well...
Well, now that the old scoundrel's dead... Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. No offence intended, I assure you, but... now that the old gentleman's gone to his dear rest, do we have to have that awful old hag hanging round this place?
What do you suggest I do? Sack her?
Sack? Mrs. Fitzackerly? I don't think you properly appreciate the position, Mr. Spencer. Mrs. Fitzackerly's been here since the silent days. She used to play the piano. She's the only one what knows how this place runs. Sack Mrs. Fitzackerly? She'll be wanting to sack old Tom next.
Yes, I see. What you really mean is you just want me to say something rude and unpleasant to her.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Matt backs toward the door.
Well, try to think of something to say.
Then leaves. Later in the office.
Good morning. Be sure keen about your service. Who? Huh? What haven't you heard? Yes, this Mr. Spencer. Of course. Just hold on a moment, please, while I hand him the telephone.
Thank you, Mrs. Fitzackerly. Hello?
Well, Hardcastle seems to be falling for it, all right.
Yes, fine.
The old Watson may not move until he's absolutely convinced you're not bluffing.
What?
Well, he must be convincing. Spend a few pounds, as ostentatiously as possible, of course. In my judgment, you'll get it all back.
Soon after, Matt's on the roof, fixing the letters on the sign. Mr. Quill works on his equipment. Mrs. Fitzackerly does some gentle dusting. Tom sweeps the cinema floor. And Jean cleans windows. With binoculars, Hardcastle watches from his office window. Matt starts to climb down a ladder from the roof. But when the train passes... everything shakes violently. And the U on the Bijou sign falls over. Matt carefully climbs back up to right it. Later, he fixes the unstable cinema seats, while Mr. Quill stands on a ladder cleaning the screen, and Mrs. Fitzackerly sits mending it. When Matt finishes fixing one seat, he sits down in it. But it falls back, knocking down all the rows behind it. Mr. Quill falls through the screen.
Mr. Quill!
Later, a banner is put up outside the Bijou announcing its grand reopening as a car passes with Hardcastle and a colleague.
They're going ahead, all right. No doubt about that, Albert.
Aye.
In the Bijou office, Matt paces.
11 o'clock, you said, he said. 10 past now.
Perhaps you're fast, darling.
Perhaps he's changed his mind.
Look here, if you two carry on like this when he shows up, he'll offer you a fiver for the place. For goodness sake, remember, you're the reluctant sellers. He's the anxious. That's our boy.
Carter opens the door for Hardcastle.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Hardcastle. Good morning, Mrs. Spencer. I see you cleaned the whole place up a bit. Well, it needed it. And I'll give you a capital E for effort, lad. Both of you.
Well, we haven't really started yet, have we, darling?
Yes.
We'll need a good deal of time if
Hold on a minute. That's what I want to see you about.
Mr. Hardcastle?
Oh, thank you.
Carter offers him a chair.
It won't do, you know. It won't do. Nice young couple like yourselves. You've no business in this business. If you'd seen your great-uncle, what it did for him in the end. What old battle-axe for Zachary. I remember when she was a wee slip of a thing. Pretty as a picture. A big picture, mark you. No, I'd have been around here sooner, only it took me some time to convince my partners that we should raise our offer.
Oh, darling, I'm not going to sell now.
Well, it's all right, darling. There's no harm in hearing what Mr. Hardcastle has to say.
Well, what I have to say, lad, is this. I'm prepared to offer you £1,500. £1,500.
I'm afraid we're all wasting time, Mr. Hardcastle.
Well, a few weeks ago, my clients were more than willing to negotiate a sale. Then, of course, they had no intention of opening up the Bijou.
And making it our home.
Yes, they've already invested a lot of capital in this place, you know.
Oh, I know, I know. But, you didn't expect me to make my best offer straight out like, did you?
What is your best offer?
Well, I'm authorized to go to the sum of £2,000. In cash.
Mr. Hardcastle, what you and your partners are overlooking is the wonderful challenge the Bijou presents to my client.
Why, in 6 months' time, well, we'll say a year. In a year's time, we hope to have...
Well, goodbye, lad.
Are you going?
Goodbye, Mrs. Spencer.
Goodbye, Mr. Hardcastle. Thank you for coming.
Goodbye, Mr. Carter.
Goodbye.
Carter lets him out and allows him to overhear.
Full cinemascope, full stereophonic sound, the lot. No expense spared.
I agree. We've got to make Fabijou the best little cinema in this part of the country. By the time we've finished with it...
Thoughtful, Hardcastle leaves the Bijou, and Jean watches from a window.
It's all right. It's all right. It's gone.
Hey, you don't think we overdid things, do you?
Not a bit. Mark my words, within 24 hours, he'll be back with a bigger offer. All he got to do now is sit down and wait. And give me a ring when he turns up.
They step into the lobby.
What do we do if he doesn't?
Oh, he will, don't worry. Hardcastle needs that car park badly, and he's got to buy the Bijou to get it.
For one thing, seems pretty certain. He thinks we intend running the place.
The moment we've cashed his check, I tell him. Nothing on earth would have induced us to open this dump.
Sweeping behind a curtain, Tom has overheard and considers Matt's words with shock and despair. Shoulders slumped, he shuffles down a hallway, dragging his broom listlessly. Later, Tom shuffles down a street in town and heads into a cafe. Slowly, he closes the front door, then approaches the counter, where he sits beside the Grand's commissionaire.
Cup of tea, please, miss.
The commissionaire retrieves his gloves from under Tom's elbow.
All right, all right. Not worth talking to, I know that. Got no proper uniform, I haven't even got a proper hat. They promised me, and then he had to go and die.
Why don't you get the new bosses to buy your uniform?
They won't buy me nothing.
Why not? There seem to be a couple of mugs. Must be you're throwing out the old fleet bit, eh, Dolly?
They're not opening it.
What?
Didn't tell us nothing about it. Us who've been there 30 years. Except me, I've been there 40 years.
What haven't they told you, Tom?
They're only doing it so as Mr. Hardcastle will buy it. They don't want to run the old Bijou. Never meant to run it. Never meant to get me no uniform, neither.
Soon after, at the Grand's office...
There's only one thing to do, Albert, and that's stump up.
Aye, but it's giving best to a couple of youngsters that I don't like, Fred.
You mustn't let your personal feelings interfere with business, Albert. That car park's worth more to us than the 5,000.
Oh, no. Oh, well, if we must, we must, I suppose.
He picks up a phone.
Get Mother Bijou. Come in.
The commissionaire enters.
Can I have a word with you, sir?
At the Bijou.
Don't waste too much time on this place, darling.
I thought we ought to use something clean for his 5,000.
You know, I've been thinking. There's one thing about this situation that worries me.
What?
I bet if the old man had made a proper will, he'd have left this place to those three old goons. I mean, why shouldn't he? He didn't even know I existed.
Well,
sir, I haven't really come into my inheritance, have I? I've come into theirs. When we get that £5,000 out of old Hardcastle, we ought to give them a fair share.
Oh, Matt, you've no idea how pleased I am to hear you say that. You know, I've really begun to quite like him. Matt.
He answers his phone.
But how could he have found out?
I just don't know. But he knows you're bluffing. Look, I'd better come round.
Later in the Bijou apartments.
He says he's still willing to give you the 750 when you decide you've had enough.
Well, that tears it.
Certainly does.
I must say, I feel very largely to blame for this situation. I urge you to hold out.
Oh, Robin, you mustn't even think of it. The point is, what do we do now?
No. When you think about it, the situation hasn't really changed. The fact that Hardcastle's found out and reduced his offer doesn't alter the basic fact that he still wants to buy the Bijou. He thinks you'll panic and accept the 750.
Well, I'm in a panic.
Have any alternative?
You have one.
What's that?
Well, I hesitate to mention it.
Oh, don't, please, Robin.
Well, open the cinema. Run the place.
Run the place?
Why not?
You mean, actually, show pictures?
Yes, sooner or later he'll have to raise his offer again.
Stay here? You mean, stay here and really try to... No. Now, wait a minute. You want us to live here? To be stuck in this place? Do you mind telling me what single aspect of this situation strikes you as being even remotely amusing?
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. It's just that there's something so terribly logical about being stuck in a place that makes glue.
Soon after, they meet with the employees.
And that was our plan. True, we didn't intend to open the bijou again, but just to sell it for as much as we could get. But because we feel that this place is as much yours as it is ours, we were going to see that you were all well looked after. Somehow or other, we don't know how, Mr. Hardcastle found out. Now all he'll give us is £750, which will hardly cover the debt.
Tom slinks off.
Wait a minute, Tom. I haven't finished yet. Bob and Gunn, explain to him, will you?
Right.
Carter follows him.
Well, we decided, my wife and I, to really open the bijou, and what's more, to make a success of it.
We've got to.
If ever Hardcastle changes his mind and we make a sale, we'll see you all get a fair share.
Well, I hardly know what to say, I'm sure. It's very good of you to think of us all. We'll do the very best we can, I'm sure, Mr. Spencer. Just as we did in Mr. Spencer's day. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Fazek.
She looks at Mr. Quill and nudges him to say something.
Yeah.
Awkwardly, he stands.
Well, Mr. Spencer, it's like this here. I would like you to know that I appreciate what you said and what you're trying to do. And, believe me, I don't say this lightly, I am absolutely determined that I won't take another drop. Not another drop I won't touch, I won't.
Mr. Quill, I don't think you may realize, Mr. Spencer, what a big sacrifice this may mean for Mr. Quill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Quill.
Yes.
Thank you, Mrs. Spencer.
They walk off.
We shall really have to do something about your equipment now, Mr. Quill.
Well, that's very nice of you to think of my problems, Mr. Fajakali. I'll get you some poison.
What?
For your rats.
Oh, yes, I see.
It was old Tom who gave the game away.
Oh, no.
Apparently he overheard something. Hardcastle's commissionaire got hold of him. The old chap's in terrible shape.
Oh, darling, you must go and say something to him.
Well, all right.
Matt leaves to speak to Tom.
Everything's perfectly clear to me now. We're going to be here for the rest of our lives. Matt'll end up like great Uncle Simon. I'll be Mrs. Fazakerly, and you'll be old Tom. Isn't that what's going to happen?
Tom?
In the boiler room.
Listen, it were all my fault, sir. I'll go away. There's no place for me here.
Now, look here, Tom. Tell you what we'd better do. I think it's time we bought you that uniform.
So, it looks like they're going through with it, opening the bijou, or the bijou. Find out how they do next time in the conclusion of The Smallest Show on Earth. Now, did you find Peter Sellers in there? Huh? He's playing Mr. Quill, the projectionist, a man about 40 years older than Sellers was at the time. I'm sure he could have played Mrs. Fazakerly, too, if he'd had the chance. For information and links on the movies, description, and how to subscribe, check out the blog, moviesfortheblind.com. Also, this movie and others were obtained from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast. That's where I put up the MP3 files. So please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and listening. Be back next week. Take care.